Hi, this is Pat, and I'm reading for you today from the Clinton Journal for Friday, July the 10th. From the front page, the City Council remembers Edmonds, Gordon Woods reporting. On Tuesday, City Commissioners paid homage to longtime City Council member and City Finance Commissioner Tom Edmonds, who passed away on Friday. Mayor Helen McAlessie offered a moment of silence for Edmonds at the beginning of Tuesday's council meeting. "We lost a great person," Commissioner Ken Buchanan said. "Tom did a lot for this city." Buchanan said Edmonds had once been his boss. He said he worked with Edmonds in various capacities when Buchanan worked for the city, as well as serving as a fellow commissioner. "We lost an individual who for decades had been nothing but a promoter of the city of Clinton," said Commissioner John Wise. "He helped numerous people with getting businesses, with loans, and things to get going." Wise described Edmonds' energy for Clinton as boundless. He had nothing but caring and a great heart for Clinton. "There's probably nobody in town who cared more about the city of Clinton more than Tom Edmonds," Commissioner Dan Ballinger added. Wise also commended members of the committee that organized Clinton's July the 4th 250 celebration over the weekend. "You people really deserve a standing ovation," Wise said. Other commissioners expressed similar feelings about the event. City Administrator Tony Harris pointed out an item going on file for the next council meeting. He asked commissioners to look over documents for a TIF-1 redevelopment agreement for the fourplex unit plans for Sunrise Court. Harris told commissioners to send any questions about the plan they had to him during the two-week period before the item comes up for a council vote. Harris also mentioned the Residential Exterior Improvement Program for TIF-4 district, also up for a vote in 2 weeks. Harris said the agreement would be a residential program similar to the facade grant program for businesses. "Take a look at that," Harris said. "Let me know if you have any questions." In his report, Commissioner of Streets and Public Improvements Ken Buchanan said city workers were currently working to clean up streets in preparation for annual oil and chip work. "We're not sure when the contractors are going to be here," Buchanan said, "but they are going to be here sometime between now and August the 18th. He said streets planned for work would be posted on the city website. Buchanan also announced the citywide cleanup would be from July the 27th through September the 18th. He said there would be only one Saturday, September the 12th, available this year for drop-off at the landfill. Drop-off will be from 6 a.m. to 3 p.m. Commissioner Wise said the city would be in contact with engineers to check the progress of the new water tower project. "So the next meeting, I'm going to have an update on what's going on," Wise said. The city is also awaiting word on its low-interest loan application for the project. Also from the front page, ICC offers energy-efficient tips to help beat the heat. Springfield. Dangerously high heat and humidity is expected to continue across Illinois over the holiday weekend, and we have several weeks of summer remaining, said Illinois Commerce Commission Chairman Doug Scott. "We want Illinoisans to stay cool and safe without putting themselves at financial risk of being unable to afford their electric bills. Consumers can keep their homes and businesses cool while lowering the energy impact of peak summertime electric rates by, number one, contacting your utility about programs to reduce energy usage during peak hours. Two, installing a programmable thermostat to control the temperature overnight. Three, scheduling regular AC maintenance visits and replacing filters regularly. Four, closing curtains and other window treatments to block the sun. Five, using ceiling or box fans to keep cool. And six, caulking or adding weather strips around doors and windows to seal any leaks." And this morning we have the obituary for Thomas R. Edmonds, Thomas R. Edmonds, 74, of Clinton, passed away at 6:55 a.m. on July the 3rd, 2026, at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Services will be conducted at 11 a.m. on Friday, July the 10th, at Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton, with Pastor Daryl Howard officiating. Burial will follow at Memorial Park Cemetery in Clinton. Visitation will be held from 9 to 11 a.m. on Friday at the funeral home. Thomas graduated from Clinton High School in 1970. He earned a bachelor's degree in accounting from Millikan University and a graduate degree in banking from the University of Wisconsin. Thomas was a member and elder of the Clinton Presbyterian Church. He served continually on the Clinton City Council in various roles, beginning in 1976. Thomas was Commissioner of Accounts and Finances from 1983 to the present, the City Planning Commission from 1976 to 1983, and served twice as mayor, once from 1999 to 2003, and from August 2003 until the 2025 mayoral election. He also was a member of the Clinton Rotary Club from 1974 to 2025, and was elected Rotary President twice, in a club of which his grandfather and father were charter members. And from the op-ed page, Reader's Letters, Frontier Totally Failed Us. Our internet and landline provider is Frontier. On Wednesday, June the 3rd, around 8:30 a.m., our internet shut down, resulting in no service and no landline. Both of us are 80-plus with serious medical issues. We need our internet to go into doctor portals for medical needs, appointments, and other things. We need our landline for emergencies. That is important to have. Medical personnel can't call us, and we can't call them or anyone else. Our landline just rings busy all the time. Galey Eye Clinic can't call with updated information either. On Tuesday, June the 4th at 7:18 a.m., I, Kathy, called Frontier employee who had been very helpful in the past. He was in the area about another complaint and thought they might be connected. He came and found the problem was a cut Frontier cable on Wapella FS property, an area where a new building is being constructed. He said he would make some notes, phone calls, and open a ticket to get the cable repaired. He said Frontier has contracted that part out, so he didn't know when the repair would happen. I called Frontier many times without luck getting any help or updates from anyone. I was informed by another employee, who appeared to take over this case, that most were in southern Illinois due to the storm damages there. I let that person know that we had been without service nearly 2 weeks prior to the storms there. All the many I'm sorry and I apologize do not get us up and running for the service we are paying for. I spoke to the person in charge of seeing that FS's building gets completed, and he gave me the company's name that was digging in that area on June the 3rd at the time the service went out. He said it was the only company working there. We know the name of that company. Around 8:30 a.m. on Monday at 6:29, JCC from Effingham was here and dug down to the cut cable on FS's property. They left at 11:30 a.m. Two pickups pulled in, and two men worked there until 12:43 p.m. and were gone by 4 p.m. On Tuesday at 6:30, cable repair began again. Internet and landline services were back up at 12:04. We definitely deserve better than this. We pay our bill on time each month and have for years. We know all of this is very unacceptable from Frontier. Frontier should be willing to make very good compensation for the time involved without service, time involved on the phone with Frontier, and all the stress caused in those 27 days, and not just a credit for 27 days on our monthly bill. Think about it. What would you think or do should this be you? Maybe you work from home and can't be without these services. We know this is lengthy, but this was a very long 27 days. Vernon and Kathy Meadows of Wapella. And from the Prairie Doc column, when is it time to visit the dentist? John Bisson, DDS. Pain in your mouth is difficult to ignore, especially when it affects everyday activities like speaking, eating, or sleeping. Here are some of the most common reasons to visit your dentist. The first sign to visit your dentist is a persistent toothache. Sometimes our teeth can hurt temporarily due to things like teeth whitening or sinus issues. However, if a toothache does not go away or goes away and then comes back, this is a good sign to visit your dentist to identify the source of pain. Pain or soreness in your jaw, especially when that pain is accompanied by a headache, can point to bruxism, which is a repeated clenching or grinding of your teeth. Treating bruxism is often as simple as prescribing a custom-fit mouth guard, which separates your teeth, hence preventing any clenching or grinding. Severe bruxism can wear down or break teeth, which may need to be fixed by your dentist. If you are experiencing any swelling in your gums or jaw, this is a good indicator of an infection in your mouth. An abscessed tooth is also a signal of infection. Treatment ranges from draining the abscess, a root canal, or even pulling the tooth. Antibiotics can sometimes take care of an infection in your mouth, but leaving a tooth abscess untreated can lead to serious, even life-threatening complications. Gums that are red, swollen, and bleed every time you brush or floss your teeth could signal periodontal disease. This is an infection in the tissues that hold your teeth in place. If left untreated, periodontal disease can lead to bone loss around the teeth and eventually lead to tooth loss. If you crack or chip a tooth, you should also see your dentist as soon as possible, even if the tooth does not hurt. A crack or chip in the tooth can spread over time and may further worsen the condition of the tooth. The sooner the crack or chip is addressed by the dentist, chances are far better of a successful tooth repair and an increase in the longevity of the tooth. If a permanent tooth has been knocked out, immediate dental attention is strongly encouraged. If a tooth is knocked out, in many cases the damaged nerves and blood vessels cannot be saved. A tooth should not move in a healthy mouth, so any signs of movement, such as a wiggly tooth, usually have an underlying cause that should be assessed by a dental professional. Finally, any bumps or sores in your mouth that don't clear up in a few weeks should be checked by your dentist. Some bumps or sores, like canker sores, should clear up on their own. Other persistent or painful sores could be a sign of oral cancer and should be checked by your dentist as soon as possible. In conclusion, we strongly encourage patients to schedule an appointment with their dentist with any dental-related questions or concerns. The best way to catch any dental issues early on is to visit your dentist on a regular basis for preventive dental cleanings and checkups. Regularly scheduled dental appointments and diligent home care are the best ways to keep your smile healthy. John Bisson, DDS, is a dentist and owns Bisson Dental in Brookings, South Dakota. And a story. Rising Protein Demand Puts More Pork on Plates by Rhiannon Branch of Farm Week. As Americans want additional meat-based proteins in their diets and diverse culinary experiences, pork is being plated up on more tables across the country. Total pork consumption in the U.S. this year is estimated to total 21.9 billion pounds, up about 185 million pounds from 2025, according to the USDA. The department is projecting U.S. pork use to increase again in 2027. Global demand for pork has also been strong in the first half of 2026. Meanwhile, as millennial and Gen Z consumers take a greater role in food purchasing decisions, the pork industry is working to modify products to fit changing consumer preferences. The reality is the young consumer in today's society is very different than my parents and the baby boomer generation that has really propped up pork for a long time. Jesse Heimer, National Pork Board member, told Farm Week, "This is about recognizing where we are as an industry and as a protein and recognizing that where we're going is much different than where we've been." Meat is having a moment. Americans are eating more meat than ever before, not just pork, but beef and chicken too. According to the Meat Institute, meat sales hit a record high $112 billion in 2025, with more than 98% of American households purchasing meat for daily meals. U.S. consumption of beef, pork, and chicken are all expected to rise again this year. Meat is having a moment, Kansas State University ag economist Glenn Tonser told Farm Week. The desire for protein in the U.S. diet has definitely grown, and that's beneficial for pretty much the entire meat and livestock space. According to KSU's Meat Demand Monitor, which surveys more than 3,000 U.S. residents each month, taste and freshness are most important to consumers shopping for protein, outranking price. Woodford County Farm Bureau member Chad Lehman, who markets about 120,000 pigs annually from his farm in Eureka, said his family changed herd genetics to accommodate consumers. "We raise Duroc-sired pigs now because studies have shown that members prefer the taste of Duroc pork versus other breeds," he said. Knowing consumers are interested in animal welfare, the Lehmans also transition to open pen gestation for their sows and focus on educating consumers about the benefits of raising pigs in barns. Pork chops are the number one cut. Seasonal demand for pork peaks in the summer months, and pork chops are the most popular cut of pork. According to data from the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis, the average retail price for pork chops in the U.S. cities was $4.33 per pound in April of 2026, up 9 cents per pound or 2.1% from $4.24 last year. During an educational session at the 2026 World Pork Expo in Des Moines, Iowa, NPB CEO David Newman demonstrated how to trim a pork carcass into different cuts and challenged attendees to explore how traditional primal cuts can be processed differently to entice consumers. As the energy and the industry has changed, as our consumer has changed, are we meeting the consumer where they want to be? Newman asked the audience. For example, Newman said there are more air fryers in the U.S. households today than there are coffee makers, pointing to a need for smaller cuts that can easily fit in condensed appliances. Portion sizes are also more relevant to the growing number of consumers on GLP-1 weight loss medications and desire more protein packed into smaller meals. "This doesn't have to be rocket science. This is meat science," Newman told Farm Week. "You could actually just cut that pork shoulder roast in half to make a portion size that will meet a smaller family or meet someone who's eating less grams of protein at a single serving, or make it something that will fit in an air fryer." What's in a name? Let's use a name that also gives consumer recognizable experience. Should we call it a pork ribeye, for example? That's exactly what it is from an anatomical standpoint, Newman said. Culturally, authentic names are also resonate well with consumers. Things that I like to highlight out of the carcass are some Spanish and Italian cuts, like the pluma or the secreto, Newman said. "It's not about the cut, it's about the dish, and it's about the eating experience they could get from that." Catering to different cultures is also an important goal of the National Pork Board's ongoing consumer marketing. Taste what pork can do. NPB recently launched a new tagline, Explora todo el gusto del pork, to connect with young Hispanic consumers. Over the next 20 or 30 years, the majority of the U.S. population growth is going to come from Hispanic American audiences. So this is about making sure that we're meeting them, that very important audience, where they are, Newman said. Because pork is so culturally relevant and authentic to them, it's a dynamite audience for us. Challenges ahead. Continued demand growth in the pork industry isn't certain. Lehman pointed to California's Proposition 12, which places housing restrictions on farms that ship pork to this state. This story was distributed through a cooperative project between Illinois Farm Bureau and the Illinois Press Association. More food and farming news? Visit farmweeknow.com. 4-H Fair scheduled for July 9 through 12. Clinton. Fairgrounds will be buzzing with excitement during the DeWitt, Macon, and Piatt 4-H General Projects and Livestock Show, July 9 through July 12. All general project exhibits will be open for public view from July 10th through 12th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Livestock exhibits will also be open for public viewing July 10 through 12th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. July 9 was tractor driving. July 10, general projects judging 9 to 3. Rabbit show at 10 a.m. Goat show at noon. Olympics with DeWitt County Farm Bureau at 7 p.m. All youth are welcome to participate. July 11, general projects judging 8:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. The swine show at 8 a.m., the poultry show at 9 a.m., the sheep show at 2 p.m., the master showmanship contest at 6 p.m. July the 12th, general projects judging 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., the beef show at 9 a.m., the talent show at 2:30 p.m., the awards program at 4 p.m. With over 85 different project areas, our 4-H members have ample opportunity to display their skills and creativity to their communities, said Marissa Capps, 4-H program coordinator. It is always a true joy to see what has inspired our youth each year and to hear them speak about their individual passions. A talent show has been added to the final day of the show, followed by the awards ceremony recognizing the members' achievements from the shooting sports final shooting competitions, horse show and general projects, and livestock show. Families are asked to bring lawn chairs for events as seating is limited. University of Illinois provides equal opportunities in programs in employment. If you need reasonable accommodation to participate, please call 217-877-6042. And in law enforcement, DeWitt County Sheriff's Office, June 26th to July the 3rd. Hamza Alboy, 30, Wesley Chapel, Florida, was issued a citation for speeding 74 miles per hour in a 40 mile per hour zone. Alboy was released with required court appearances. There was investigation into the scene of an accident which occurred at approximately 10:03 on 6/24/26 revealed that D. Ransdell, 60, of Clinton, was stopped at a sign on Walnut Road at U.S. Highway 51, facing north. Grace Duke, 19, of Clinton, approached from behind to stop behind Ransdell. Ransdell stated he began to enter the intersection to turn onto U.S. Highway 51 North, but then stopped for a truck. When he stopped, Duke collided with the rear end of Ransdell's vehicle. Ransdell stated Duke pulled forward and she was watching traffic to the southwest when she collided with the rear of Ransdell. Both units were driven from the scene. Another investigation into the scene of an accident which occurred at approximately 9:11 on 6:30:26 revealed that Sonobel Patel, 54, of Lake Villa, was traveling south on Friends Creek Road and came to a stop sign at the intersection of Friends Creek Road and Illinois 10. Patel stated he stopped at the stop sign and proceeded into the intersection, turning left to travel east on Illinois 10. Patel explained that he did not see a car driven by Derek Atterbury, 51, of Weldon, while at the stop sign. Atterbury was traveling westbound on Illinois 10 when Patel entered the intersection off Friends Creek Road. Atterbury struck Patel on the driver's side back wheel. Damages to Patel's vehicle included disabling damages to both rear tires, back bumper, back right wheel well, and airbag deployment, and unknown undercarriage damages. Patel's vehicle was towed from the scene by Balm's Towing. Damages to Atterbury's vehicle include disabling damages with all-around front end damage, grill hood, driver's and passenger side, quarter panel, headlights, unknown motor damage, and airbag deployment. Atterbury's vehicle was towed from the scene by Balm's Towing. Patel was issued a citation for failure to reduce speed to avoid an accident. Ricardo de la Cruz, 30, of Bloomington, was issued a citation for speeding 26 to 34 miles per hour over the limit on 87 miles per hour in a 55 mile per hour zone. De la Cruz was released with a required court appearance. All suspects are presumed innocent until found guilty in a court of law. And just as a reminder, I will read the Clinton Journal letter policy. The Clinton Journal accepts responsibly written letters covering topics of interest to our readers. Letters must be the original works of their senders. The Journal does not publish anonymous letters. Letters submitted for publication must include the name of the author, address, and telephone number. Addresses and telephone numbers will not be published. The editor and manager reserves the right to edit letters for length and or content and to publish letters using any journal platform, such as print newspaper, website, or other electronic delivery method. Readers should keep in mind that letters published are the opinions of their authors and not news reports and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this newspaper, its staff, or its advertisers. The Journal does not certify information used in letters, but will remove any passages it considers potentially libelous. Election letters. The Journal will accept letters from private citizens endorsing candidates or ballot measures. Candidates must purchase political advertising. And now a few notes from our History Almanac. In 1969, the National League was divided up into two baseball divisions. 1973, Britain granted the Bahamas their independence after three centuries of British colonial rule. In 1985, Coca-Cola resumed selling the old formula of Coke. It was renamed Coca-Cola Classic. It was also announced that they would continue to sell New Coke. In 1990, Mikhail Gorbachev won re-election as the leader of the Soviet Communist Party. 1991, Boris Yeltsin took the oath of office as the first elected president of the Russian Republic. In 1991, President Bush lifted economic sanctions against South Africa, citing its profound transformation towards racial equality. And on that note, I'll close for today and see you next week.